Dublin Walk Part 2, O'Connell Street. The streets of Dublin are the stage upon which so much of the nation's dramatic history has played out. Today, there are reminders everywhere of Ireland's proud struggle for freedom. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. Thanks for joining me on Part 2 of our Dublin City Walk. This part of the walk features sites and monuments recalling Ireland's long fight for independence. It's a straight shot through the heart of North Dublin up the city's broad main boulevard, O'Connell Street. We'll start at the River Liffey, where Dublin was born. Then we'll head up the boulevard past stirring statues of patriots and a soaring 400-foot-tall spire. Along the way, we'll get a sense of the vibrant modern city of Dublin today, joining the constant parade of people along this popular street. A highlight of our walk is the General Post Office, one of the most famous buildings in the country, the site of the 1916 Easter Rising that launched Ireland's final push to nationhood. Finally, we'll end at a memorial park dedicated to both the joy of that independence and its terrible cost. Allow about an hour to do this half-mile-long walk. The walk works fine either day or night. But if you want to go inside the worthwhile museum about the 1916 Rising, which we will not do on this walk, by the way, it's open only during the day. Now let's get started as we experience the lively modern scene and the poignant history of Dublin's O'Connell Street. To help us along the way, I've invited a good friend and virtual travel buddy. Welcome, Lisa.
Hi, Rick.
Lisa will give us helpful directions and sightseeing tips throughout the tour.
And my first tip is to be sure you get our tour updates. Just press the icon at the lower right of your device. You'll find any updates and helpful instructions unique to this tour.
Things like closures, opening hours, and reservation requirements.
There's also tips on how to use this audio tour and even the full printed script.
Yes. So pause for just a moment right now to review our updates and special tips.
It's okay. We'll wait.
And then...
Let the tour begin.
The tour begins on O'Connell Bridge.
Start on this wide bridge that crosses the River Liffey. From here, you'll see a big statue on the north bank that marks the head of the street we'll be walking up, O'Connell Street. But for now, just enjoy the view from the bridge. Look west, or upstream. In other words, look away from the skyscraper and toward the picturesque Haypenny Bridge. Rick?
Thanks, Lisa. You're standing at what is arguably the very center of Dublin. This bridge connects the city, both north and south, and old and new. If you're joining us from our companion tour, Dublin City Walk Part 1, you know that it was on the banks of the Liffey that Dublin was born. And you also know that, as Dublin grew, it came under the control of the British. For 700 years, the Brits ruled the island of Ireland, with Dublin as their capital. Time and again, the Irish people rose up in rebellion, trying to free themselves from British rule. Now, in part two of our walk, we'll see the culmination of that long struggle for Irish freedom. The River Liffey divides the city into two distinct cultures. The South Bank, which we saw in part one of our Dublin walk, is the older, more genteel part of town. It's home to Dublin Castle, Trinity College, Parliament, and a host of stately old buildings in the Georgian style. Meanwhile, the Northern Bank was always more working class and rough around the edges. Nowadays, there's plenty of culture in North Dublin. But Dubliners still love to joke about the divide. Hey, Lisa, what do you call a Northsider in a courtroom?
The accused. And what do you call a Southsider?
Your Honor.
In 1794, a bridge was built here, uniting those two halves. It allowed the North Bank to grow. Soon, that original bridge had to be widened to accommodate all the traffic.
In fact, today's bridge is actually wider than it is long.
By the mid-1800s, it was the north side that was the trendy new neighborhood, complete with a grand new boulevard, O'Connell Street. That street represented Dublin's future. And it was here that the nation of Ireland finally achieved what it had longed for so long, freedom.
Let's start walking. Start heading toward the big statue on the north bank. For the best view of the monument, make your way to the pedestrian median in the middle of O'Connell Street.
We're leaving O'Connell Bridge to walk up O'Connell Street, which starts with a monument to Ireland's greatest freedom fighter, Daniel O'Connell. The Daniel O'Connell Monument. This is the man who launched the movement that would eventually bring Ireland its independence from Britain. Daniel O'Connell first rose to prominence in the early 1800s as Dublin's mayor. Next, he was elected to Parliament, representing the Irish in London. O'Connell became a powerful voice for his people.
The Irish people are also depicted on the monument. Those are the statues at O'Connell's feet. They're led by Lady Ireland.
Remember, the Irish people had been oppressed by the British for 700 years, and their dominant religion, Catholicism, had been virtually outlawed by the Protestant British government. When O'Connell was elected, he was the first Catholic member of Parliament ever. He made it his mission to stand up to the British.
The four winged statues at the base of the monument represent O'Connell's four great virtues.
Yes. First, he had great courage.
That would be the statue of the lady with a shield.
And he was loyal to Ireland. Fidelity.
The statue with her faithful dog, Fido. Like Fido for fidelity.
His final two virtues were patriotism and, most important of all, eloquence. O'Connell was an extremely eloquent public speaker. He held huge rallies, literally called monster meetings, where he spoke out against the British. Thanks to O'Connell's strong voice, the British were persuaded to relax their laws against Catholic worship. The grateful Irish began calling him the Liberator and the Great Emancipator. Next, O'Connell turned his sights on another dreaded law, the Act of Union of 1800. This was the law that officially shackled the Irish people to British rule. O'Connell stood up in Parliament and insisted that the law be repealed so Ireland could govern itself. The idea itself was considered treasonous, and O'Connell was even arrested and put in jail for his outspokenness. But he would not be deterred. O'Connell's patriotism inspired the Irish people so much that a movement to erect this monument was begun shortly after his death in 1847. It was finally completed in 1882. Despite his passion for freedom, O'Connell always preached nonviolence. Having personally seen the violence of the French Revolution in 1789, O'Connell insisted on change through peaceful and legal means. He hoped that the sheer size of his monster meetings would persuade the British to grant the Irish people their freedom. But the British would not yield. As we'll see on our walk, the march to freedom that O'Connell started would take several more generations to complete. And eventually, violence would be necessary.
Is that why I see bullet marks on the monument? Right below Lady Courage's shield, there's a bullet hole.
Yes, that happened in the Easter Rising of 1916. That was when O'Connell's visionary dream of freedom finally started to become a reality. A bloody reality.
Ooh, I can't wait. Let's start walking up O'Connell Street. Go up the wide, tree-lined median strip, heading toward the spike in the sky. Along the way, we'll see statues honoring several great Irishmen who carried on O'Connell's legacy.
More statues of patriots. As you walk up the median strip, you'll see a statue to another Irish patriot who followed in Daniel O'Connell's footsteps. William Smith O'Brien. O'Brien was one of O'Connell's colleagues and was inspired by the Great Emancipator. But where O'Connell preached freedom through peaceful means, O'Brien turned to violent revolution. What changed O'Brien's mind was a sudden calamity that devastated the nation, the Irish potato famine. In 1845, Ireland's staple crop of potatoes was hit by blight and almost totally wiped out. Within just a few years, 1 million Irish had starved to death. Another 1 million immigrated to America and elsewhere. Meanwhile, the British government did nothing to help the suffering Irish people. O'Brien was enraged. In 1848, he rallied his band of young Irelanders to take up arms and rise up against British forces. The rebellion was brutally squashed, and O'Brien was sentenced to be drawn and quartered. But O'Brien's impact was so great that 70,000 Irishmen signed a petition for clemency, which at least spared his life. Thanks to William Smith O'Brien, the movement toward Irish independence took another step forward.
Let's also keep stepping forward to the next statue up the street.
As you go, remember that these men were just the tip of the iceberg of a huge cultural movement. All throughout the 1800s, the Irish people were rediscovering their ethnic roots. They were reviving the Gaelic language, which the British had discouraged. They told old legends and sang traditional folk songs. They were forging a distinct Irish national identity. Part of that was their national theater company, the Abbey Theater, which is still going strong, just a block down the street to the right.
But we won't be going there. Just keep going to the next statue.
This is Sir John Gray, one of Daniel O'Connell's ardent supporters. He shared O'Connell's progressive vision of making Ireland great through peaceful means. As a member of Parliament and a newspaper owner, he promoted Catholic rights. He lobbied to repeal the union with Britain. He also brought safe drinking water to Dublin, a city that had been plagued with waterborne diseases. Gray's progressive reforms only served to whet the Irish appetite for more.
That's where our next Irish hero comes in. Keep going to the next statue.
Despite reforms by men like Gray, Ireland of the late 1800s was still one of Europe's poorest countries. Dublin was a tale of two cities, rich British elites and poor, grimy Irish factory workers. That's when James Larkin entered the scene. Big Jim Larkin was a union organizer back when that was dangerous business. Having been born poor himself, Larkin knew the hard lot of common workers. In 1913, Larkin called a general strike.
In the statue, he lifts his arms like he's telling the Irish people, "Rise up."
It soon became clear this strike was more than just about the rights of a few factory workers. It was a stand against the whole system. For 7 months, the bosses and the workers locked horns in a tense face-off. Then, James Larkin staged an outrageous stunt that would break the deadlock.
And it happened right here.
Exactly. A crowd of workers gathered here, where the statue stands today, to protest. Larkin disguised himself with a fake beard. He went into a nearby building, the one to the right of the statue.
That would be the stately building with a clock over the entrance.
Right. Back then, it was a fancy hotel where the factory bosses had their headquarters. Once inside, Larkin made his way upstairs and stepped out onto the balcony. He ripped off his disguise and addressed the crowd below. Though his exact words aren't recorded, one of his best-known quotes is inscribed on the base of the statue.
It says, "The great appear great because we are on our knees. Let us rise."
Larkin's words inflamed the crowd. The protest turned into a riot. The British-backed police charged the crowd. Hundreds of workers were savagely beaten. The short-lived uprising was brutally crushed. But those events that took place here had a huge impact on the Irish people. The 1913 strike inspired workers everywhere to fight for better working conditions. And the brave defiance against the British inspired Irish people everywhere to take the struggle to a national level. The strike proved that Ireland's poor, unwashed masses could actually come together and stand up for their rights. James Larkin's call to rise up is what led to the most important event in modern Irish history, the Easter Rising.
That 1916 Easter Rising also began right here. For that, turn your attention to the historic building on the left side of the street, the General Post Office.
The General Post Office, or GPO. Dublin's Central Post Office is not just another place to buy stamps. It's a national symbol. The GPO is where the 1916 Easter Rising began. That was the landmark revolt that ultimately led to Ireland's independence from Britain. Imagine the scene here on April 24, 1916, Easter Monday. A band of armed revolutionaries stormed the GPO. They were part of some 1,500 freedom fighters, who had already taken over a half dozen other strategic spots across Dublin.
Including that park called St. Stephen's Green, where part one of our walk began.
Now the rebels seized the main post office, the nerve center of the nation, with its vital telegraph. They made the GPO the headquarters for the revolution. They took down the British Union Jack and raised the green, white, and orange Irish flag. They declared Ireland a free nation. Then one of the leaders, Patrick Pearse, stepped outside. He stood in front of the columns, with the statue of Lady Ireland high overhead. Pearse addressed the cheering crowd. He began solemnly reading a recently drafted document, the Proclamation of the Irish Republic.
Kind of like America's Declaration of Independence. The proclamation began, "Irishmen and Irishwomen, in the name of God and of the dead generations from which she receives her old tradition of nationhood, Ireland, through us, summons her children to her flag and strikes for her freedom."
The 1916 Easter Rising was underway. For the next 5 days, Dublin's streets were a chaotic battleground. Scrappy guerrilla fighters faced off against 15,000 trained British soldiers. Hundreds were killed. Thousands were injured. The post office was the site of a bloody 5-day siege, a kind of Irish Alamo.
The pillars are still pockmarked with bullet holes. By the way, you're welcome to step inside the GPO to see its historic interior. It's still a working post office. Explore the interior while Rick tells us the rest of the story.
The initial euphoria soon led to the grim realization that the rebels were hopelessly outmanned. Meanwhile, the rest of the nation failed to answer Dublin's call to arms. So, on April 29th, the rebel leaders here in the GPO surrendered. The Easter Rising Rebellion had been quashed, just like so many uprisings over the centuries had been before.
But then, the British overplayed their hand.
Exactly. The British overreacted and cracked down too hard. They arrested over 3,000 insurgents, including the ringleaders here in the GPO, men like Patrick Pearse, James Connolly, and Michael Collins.
Names that Irish patriots today still remember with pride.
16 key rebels were brutally executed across town in Kilmainham Jail.
The same prison where so many earlier Irish patriots met a similar fate.
The Irish people came to look on these men not as troublemakers, but as martyrs to the cause of freedom. Their deaths galvanized the nation. Now there was no turning back. As the poet W.B. Yeats put it in his poem about the impact of the 1916 Easter Rising, all changed, changed utterly. A terrible beauty is born.
If you want more about the Easter Rising and the long struggle for independence, you could pause the audio tour, pay admission, and see the GPO Witness History Museum inside the GPO.
Its photos and interactive displays help bring that dramatic history to life.
But we're moving on.
In fact, let's take a break from Ireland's struggles and turn our attention to the lively, modern Dublin all around us.
There's no better place for that than the tall metal spire. Make your way there.
The spire, the center of O'Connell Street. Make like a drum major and look up, way, way up to the top. This piece of art is called the spire. It's a 398-foot-tall needle made of stainless steel. The spire trumpets Dublin's 21st-century rejuvenation and aspirations for the future. But cynical Dubliners, as they often do, scoff at the spire. Some call it the tallest waste of 5 million euros in all of Europe.
I kind of like it.
You would. Dubliners have given the spire a million rude nicknames. Take your pick. The stiletto in the ghetto, the stiffy on the liffy.
The poker near the croaker?
And my favorite, the pole in the hole. Those who call it the erection at the intersection point out that while construction was begun in the 1990s to mark the turn of the millennium, Dublin was only able to get it up by 2004.
The spire stands at the very center of O'Connell Street. Take a moment to appreciate the scale of this grand boulevard. Look way up O'Connell Street, then look way down to the other end.
O'Connell Street is 500 yards long and 50 yards wide. It bustles with the energy of modern Dublin. It's home to important governmental buildings like the post office, as well as department stores, major cinemas, fancy hotels, local boutiques.
And plenty of fast food joints.
It's become pedestrian friendly, and a convenient tram line runs right down the middle. Any time of day or night, there's a constant parade of Dubliners and tourists walking the boulevard.
By the way, feel free to just stroll around this pedestrian-friendly area near the spire and take in the scene from various perspectives.
Back in the 1800s, this was Dublin's Champs-Élysées. It was a stately promenade lined with classical-looking buildings where Dublin's elites strolled, shopped, and paraded in their carriages. The post office is one of the few survivors of that genteel era, with its Greek-style columns, triangular pediment, balustrade, and grid-like windows. It was a masterpiece of that neoclassical style called Georgian. In fact, it was one of the last great Georgian buildings erected in this elegant capital. But genteel O'Connell Street got rocked hard by the 1916 Easter Rising and by the subsequent violence. Riots, artillery shells, guerrilla warfare, skirmishes in the streets, it reduced many grand old buildings to rubble. The post office basically burned down and had to be reconstructed behind its Georgian facade. When O'Connell Street was finally rebuilt, it went up haphazardly, a mix of buildings from different eras. Fortunately, most buildings were kept to the same height, giving the street a fairly uniform look. By the 1960s, one of the last vestiges of the old O'Connell Street was a 130-foot-tall pillar dedicated to the British hero, Lord Nelson. It stood in the center of O'Connell Street, a lingering symbol of the hated British oppression. In 1966, on the 50th anniversary of the Easter Rising, a group of Irish extremists blew the monument to smithereens. It was replaced with what we see today, the spire.
Before we move on, take a moment to just appreciate how this area near the spire has become a kind of communal piazza.
It's the stage where modern Dublin gathers. It's where major political demonstrations take place, where soccer victories are celebrated. The St. Patrick's Day Parade runs through here. And every Easter Monday, people all across Ireland tune in to their TVs to watch the annual commemoration of the 1916 Easter Rising right here. O'Connell Street has become an open-air museum of monuments to great Irish heroes. The street itself has become a national symbol, a symbol of Ireland's freedom.
Let's continue our walk up O'Connell Street to see more monuments to Irish patriots.
Upper O'Connell Street.
Just a few steps past the spire is the statue of Father Theobald Matthew. Consider his unique contribution to the Irish cause.
As a leader of the temperance movement of the 1840s, Father Matthew convinced over half the Irish population to sign a pledge of abstinence. Historians claim he was the man who sobered Ireland up enough to listen to Daniel O'Connell.
Keep walking up the median. Our next landmark is a couple hundred yards further up, the Gresham Hotel on the right-hand side.
As we go, we're entering a more workaday part of O'Connell Street. There are fewer grand Georgian buildings from the street's era as a promenade for horse carriages. Remember, the street suffered heavy damage in the Wars of Independence, and this upper section of the street was rebuilt in a more functional style. And O'Connell Street is still changing as Dublin grows. Check out the area on the left-hand side of the street. This is part of a major renovation project. Frankly, this part of O'Connell Street had become pretty junked up with fast food joints and decaying structures. The move was made to tear down many old buildings here, some historic, some not, and create a more people-friendly stretch of modern businesses and apartments.
Everything changes, I guess, as the Irish like to say. Sometimes one day changes everything. Sometimes years change nothing.
Lisa, I have no idea what that's supposed to mean.
Well, regardless, just keep walking toward the Gresham Hotel, ahead on the right.
On the way, you'll pass one venerable remnant of earlier times, the Savoy Cinema. It's on the right. Dating from the 1920s, this glorious old-style movie house hosted film premieres and red carpet events. It's recently been subdivided into a multiplex.
Because everything changes.
Yes, but it's still Dublin's go-to cinema. One thing that hasn't changed much is the Gresham Hotel, just a few doors up from the Savoy. Dating back to 1817, the Gresham still retains the chandeliered elegance of old O'Connell Street. It's a good place for a fancy tea or beer.
Or an Irish coffee. But later. For now, let's continue walking up the median to our next monument, a tall obelisk about 200 yards further up that marks the top of O'Connell Street.
Walking to the Parnell Monument. The obelisk we're approaching honors Charles Stuart Parnell. Parnell, more than any other man, symbolizes Ireland's progressive spirit of the 19th century. In the 1880s, as a member of Parliament in London, Parnell lobbied hard for independence from Britain, or what was called Home Rule. With his charisma and his negotiating skills, it looked like Parnell was just about to convince the British to grant independence. Peacefully. Then, in 1890, with freedom at Ireland's fingertips, a scandal broke out around Parnell, a sex scandal involving Parnell and his mistress. Just like that, he was drummed out of politics, scuttling his independence initiative.
After that, Ireland had to turn to violence to win its freedom. Rick, as we continue walking uphill to the Parnell Monument, tell us about that final push to nationhood, the bloody years after the 1916 Easter Rising.
As you recall, though the Rising was crushed, it ignited an unstoppable desire for freedom. In the 1918 parliamentary elections, the pro-independence party won by a landslide. That emboldened members of parliament to stand up to Britain. They brazenly set up their own Irish parliament here in Dublin.
In fact, it was at Mansion House, which we saw on part one of the walk.
That act of defiance in 1919 sparked what's called the War of Independence. For the next 2 years, Irish rebels took up arms against British troops. Some of the most bitter battles took place right here along O'Connell Street. In all, 1,000 people died. The Irish wore Britain down, and the Brits proposed a compromise. They would allow most of the Irish island to be free, as long as the north remained under British rule. The Irish people argued over the proposal. Some wanted the treaty, others violently opposed it. That sparked 2 more years of fighting, not against the British, but between Irish, as pro-treaty Irish fought anti-treaty Irish. It's called the Irish Civil War.
Wow. It's like if our American ancestors had just fought the Revolutionary War, then the Civil War back to back.
After countless firebombings, street fights, and assassinations, an agreement was finally reached. And in 1923, the modern Republic of Ireland was born.
By now, you should be at the Parnell Monument. It's full of symbolism that captures Ireland's complicated history.
First, there's the proud statue of Parnell himself. He stands next to the symbol of Ireland, the Celtic harp. The gold inscription is from one of Parnell's stirring speeches. No man, he declared, has a right to fix the boundary to the march of a nation. Parnell was a visionary. Like Daniel O'Connell before him, he advocated freedom through peace. And like other patriots, he served time at Kilmainham Jail. Parnell was fighting so the entire Irish Isle could be free.
To that point, look at the names ringing the monument. It lists the 4 ancient provinces of Ireland and all 32 Irish counties.
That's significant because this encompasses the entire island, both Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. This was Parnell's glorious vision of a modern, democratic nation that was independent of Britain, peaceful, and that united all of Ireland.
And then came that sex scandal.
Followed by years of civil war, violence, and division.
Oh, what Ireland's destiny might have been. Let's continue our walk.
But before we go, note the Parnell Street tram stop nearby. When our walk is finished, the tram is a quick way back to the city center. Every tram that stops here goes back to where our walk began and then continues across the Liffey River and on to Trinity College.
Now, start walking again, behind the Parnell Monument and further uphill.
Walking to the Garden of Remembrance.
Keep going uphill, along the left side of the street. Note that at this point, O'Connell Street changes names to Parnell Square East.
As you cross the intersection, glance a half block to the left. You may see a small green cupola. This marks Dublin's venerable maternity hospital, where countless Dubliners have been hatched since the 1700s.
Once across the intersection, you'll pass by a round stone building with classical columns.
This is the Gate Theatre, which has presented live stage plays for nearly a century. In a way, it represents the recovery after those bitter wars of independence. After Ireland gained nationhood, this once isolated nation was now joining the world community. This theater hosted artists from across the globe. The American actor Orson Welles got his first gig here. So did Geraldine Fitzgerald and James Mason. Since then, the Gate Theater has championed countless international artists with Irish ties, from Samuel Beckett to Brian Friel to Rafe Fiennes.
Keep going uphill toward the end of the block where this walk will end, at the park on the left.
The park celebrates the freedom Ireland enjoys today. But as we've seen, it wasn't all rainbows and leprechauns getting there. Even after the Irish Civil War ended, Ireland was still sharply divided. Politically, the island was split in two, with two different nations. Northern Ireland remained British and mostly Protestant, while the South was Irish and Catholic. Bitter feuding continued throughout the 20th century.
What was called in Northern Ireland, the Troubles.
An armed band of underground fighters called the Irish Republican Army carried on the fight. Their mission? To drive the British out of Northern Ireland so the island could be completely united under Irish rule. Thanks to the IRA, much of the 20th century was marked with a constant litany of violence, riots, car bombings, assassinations, and Irish-on-Irish hatred. Finally, in the 1990s, cooler heads prevailed. A ceasefire was called, and all of Ireland's voices were brought peacefully into the political process. As the 21st century dawned, Ireland entered a new era of peace and prosperity.
By now, you should be reaching the big green park on your left.
By the way, the Dublin Writers' Museum is nearby. It's just across the street from the top of the park. You could stop in there after our walk. No other country so small has produced such a wealth of great literature.
No wonder. It's a nation of stubborn, independent thinkers with the gift of gab. When you reach the park, go on in.
It's an oasis of peace. Take in the gentle ambiance of this park.
Make your way to the main feature of the park, a long, peaceful pool.
The Garden of Remembrance.
Feel free to just stroll around the park and enjoy its solemn atmosphere.
And the many layers of its powerful symbolism. This Garden of Remembrance remembers all the people who gave their lives for Irish freedom. Think of all the failed Irish rebellions. 1798, 1803, 1848, 1867.
Plus, all those politicians who lobbied for peaceful change. Daniel O'Connell, William O'Brien,
James Larkin, Patrick Pearse, Charles Parnell, and so many more. This park was dedicated in 1966, the 50th anniversary of the 1916 Easter Rising. And it was built on the exact spot where that Easter Rising's leaders were held before being transferred to Kilmainham Jail and their execution. The park's symbolism goes even deeper. The long pool is in the shape of a cross, recognizing Ireland's Christian heritage. The mosaics on the bottom of the pool go back even farther, to Ireland's ancient Celtic roots. The wavy patterns make the pond look like one of Ireland's timeless rivers. Other mosaics depict old Celtic swords and shields. These are symbolic of Ireland's proud fighting heritage. They also represent how those early Irish warriors eventually proclaimed peace with their ritual of throwing their weapons into a river. Modern Ireland has made a point of embracing its Celtic heritage. The Gaelic language and traditional legends have been revived. And in 1937, the Irish people even adopted a new name for their country. From the old Celtic language, they called it Era.
Now check out the bronze statue at the end of the pool up the stairs.
The statue depicts four siblings representing the people of Ireland. They look like they're twisting in agony. They're in the midst of the painful process of transforming from ordinary mortals to beautiful swans. It refers to that line from the Yeats poem about the 1916 Easter Rising. How, despite the violence of revolution, something good comes from it.
A terrible beauty is born. On the wall nearby is another poem. It begins, "In the darkness of despair, we saw a vision. We lit the light of hope." And the poem ends, "The vision became a reality. Winter became summer. Bondage became freedom. And this we left you as your inheritance. O generations of freedom, remember us, the generations of the vision."
One of modern Ireland's most stirring moments occurred here in 2011, when Queen Elizabeth II came to Ireland. She laid a wreath at this statue and bowed her head in silence. It was a remarkable show of respect for the Irish rebels, rebels who had fought and died trying to gain freedom from her own United Kingdom. This was a hugely cathartic moment for both nations. Thanks to Ireland's rebels, and thanks to its visionaries, many of whom we met on this walk, today's independent Ireland was born. Though the Irish nation still has its struggles, it's now going about them in a more peaceful way. Let's finish our walk pondering the flag of Ireland that flies overhead. The symbolism is telling. Green for Catholics,
orange for Protestants,
and white for the hope that they can all live together in peace. We hope you've enjoyed our Dublin Walk Part 2. Thanks to the co-authors of this tour, Pat O'Connor and Jean Openshaw. To see more of Dublin, check out our companion tour, Dublin Walk Part 1. This tour was excerpted from the Rick Steves Ireland Guidebook, co-authored with Pat O'Connor. For more details on eating, sleeping, and sightseeing in Dublin and Ireland, refer to the latest edition of that guidebook. For more free audio tours and information about our TV shows, bus tours, and travel gear, visit our website at ricksteves.com. This tour was produced by Cedar House Audio Productions. Thanks.
Cheers.
And happy travels.